Last month, media outlets around the world had to grapple with how to report a story that President Trump had reportedly referred to Haiti and African nations during a meeting in the Oval Office by using a certain derogatory word.
By now, we all know what that word was, so we won't repeat it again, and the president denied saying it. But it seemed to mark a shift in what was acceptable to say and not to say in public. So this got us thinking, was this a pivotal moment in our culture that we can't come back from? Like when Congressman Joe Wilson yelled at President Obama during a 2009 address to Congress.
The reforms I'm proposing would not apply to those who are here illegal. It's not true.
So the show's Lauren Gilger decided to bring in some deep thinkers to talk more about moments like this and what they mean for our language and our culture. Hey, Lauren.
Hey. So I sat down with Dr. Cindy Stritreed-Thrin and Dr. Neil Lester from Arizona State University to talk more about this. And we started by talking about when the culture shifts and suddenly we're not shocked by something like this anymore. This is just the way things are. Here's Stritreed-Thrin to start us off.
I'm not sure that it's shocking across the board. So, for example, I think part of what shocks us is often who is allowed suddenly to say these things. If we perceive that someone verbalizes something in very derogatory ways and we expect that from a person who looks like that or sounds like that or comes from that part of town, then we're not shocked. We say, that's to be expected. That's just how those people are. And we use these sort of euphemistic ways to talk about it. But when you have people in authority or you think about who is the audience, then I think our shock, the hair on the back of our neck stands up in shock when we suddenly either think about particular audiences hearing or perceiving this, or we think about the particular position of the person who uttered it.
That's what I wonder also about having a moment like this on some of the other mainstream stations, be they radio or television, is that there's this sort of odd and interesting satisfaction that I witness when people articulate it. Because this is still about choice and the extent to which we can say it or not say it. We know what was said, so you don't have to repeat it in order to convey what it means. And I'm interested, obviously, in words. I'm more interested in what these words signify, not only in terms of whether it's public policy or attitudes more broadly, but I totally agree with you. A lot of it is not so much shock value, it's who said it. And what was the context of saying it? But if we keep repeating it, I do wonder if that does, in fact, give it more power, because now it's not hushed anymore, and it seems like people are saying with this gusto now. You know, even if we're talking about that S word, whether it was house or hole, we know what it said. But what followed that is actually more important is how does policy somehow connect with that sort of perception of certain groups of people?
To the operative question here, then, is this one of those moments where, because of who said it and the way that it reverberated around our culture after that, is this a moment that we kind of can't go back from? Is this a new normal?
I would say one of the things is that now that it's out there and people in the media often do say, reported to allegedly have said,
right.
But of course, when you're at the supermarket or when you're talking with your friends, that is not how most of us say it. We say the president referred to a swath of countries in this derogatory manner. So if you take that idea and ask, will that become normal? I think yes. I think in some places, in particular contexts, it will start out as a joking reference to this thing that happened. And then it will become, for some people, just the way that they refer to places. It's similar to, I hesitate to bring this up, but the phrase, the basket of deplorables, where we saw many people suddenly in the basket or out of the basket over time. I heard it as different references outside among common people that is not in the media. And it became simultaneously a joke, but a way to reference a particular group of people. And so I think in those moments, when we ask, is it a new normal? Is it a new political normal? It's very difficult for me to say.
Right.
Is it a new normal among how people, when they get together over beers and dinner, talk? I think we might be there. That horse might be out of the barn.
So then I want to talk about the implications of that. So once it's out of the barn, right, and you can't bring it back, but does the culture revert? Do we continue to just sort of degenerate? Or is it like at some point we reset and say, no, let's put that back in. That's no longer okay.
Well, I don't know that if in fact that's the sentiment that was expressed by using that word, that that's necessarily new. Because we are in a moment where there's a lot of fear and a lot of threat about the browning of America. So I don't know if that was not necessarily something that was articulated by a number of people who may support certain conservative political positions.
So you're saying this comes from somewhere. This
it
isn't
may
out of
have,
nowhere.
Yes, that it didn't just sort of evolve out of nothing. And that it plays out, which is what I say. The language itself is not about the word itself. It's about all the implications that are associated with that. That's what's fearful to me, is that if that's the new norm, then that would explain why there is such resistance to immigration. It would explain why there is such resistance, even in the state, against ethnic studies. This fact that people who are trying to discover themselves in the larger context of what it means to be in America and what it means to be American is a threat to a certain group of people in power to make policies and to make decisions about other people.
Yes, I think we have many examples of changing labels for either people or events or even taboo words or something. But most of the time when we can go back and look over time, we find that the attitudes and the behavior and the treatment toward individuals doesn't shift that much. So you could think of the word queer, which many people believe has successfully been reclaimed.
Yeah.
But I don't believe that that represents the new norm across America when I can open up newspapers or listen to media and find out that there is continual backlash against people who identify as LGBTQIA. Mm-hmm. And so there you can say, I have a column of evidence that suggests this was a successful reclamation, and yet I have a column of evidence that suggests the change is not complete, or that something that becomes a new norm really doesn't map on to everybody.
So given this, right, like context matter, words matter, and who is saying them matters. So then if we take those ideas and look at moments like this when things seem to shift in the general culture, what does that mean going forward? Does it mean that we're not making progress? Does it mean that we generally don't get anywhere?
You know, we started talking about culture shifts, and I think what happens is that maybe we start teasing more deeply or pulling back the layers of what these things really mean. Because we've had to do that with feminism. We had to do that with racism. We have to talk about intersectionality. So sometimes the evolution is that we are going deeper, and not so much to resolve something, but to see it more complexly, or to see it in all of its complexity. So, you know, I think about that when we start thinking about things like, well, how do we resolve racism? You know, because I get that a lot. Okay, can you come in and talk to us? We've got a 2-minute segment. Can you tell us, where do we go from here? And I say, well, in order to go from here, we need to go back to see how we got here. So it didn't take us, you know, a minute to get here, so it's going to take us more than a minute to resolve it.
Right.
So rather than trying to look for an answer, let's understand how we got here.
I often think to myself, so do we see anything changing linguistically? Do we see the way that people have conversations change around this? And
right.
I think that a lot as well for issues of political correctness or trying to replace male-only words with more neutral words that are more inclusive of people in general. So one that I've noticed, for example, is many of the young people I work with will invariably say firefighter. I have to correct myself from saying firemen, right? And I think that when my students, without really thinking, can just utter firefighter or police officer, that's different than how I grew up. So something allowed that to happen. So I like to take some little hope in that.
Well, and the fact that we're talking about biases now and unconscious biases, and there are certain things that reflects exactly what you think. But it's also one of those things where people are continually using words and then saying, oh, but I'm not racist. And then I think, well, James Baldwin says, I can't hear what you're saying because I see what you're doing. So it's less to me about political correctness than about, are we giving and extending respect and humanity to everybody, even if we disagree? And the answer is no. The answer is no. So how do we get to that point? But I totally agree with what you're saying. And I've, you know, learned how to do that myself. So this is not just looking at other people, but going back to one of our principles about being very self-reflective. And that's hard work, and people don't like to do it, myself included.
That ends on a positive note there. So Dr. Cindy Strid-Strethorin and Dr. Neil Lester, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Cindy Strid-Strid-Thrin is an associate professor of anthropology at ASU, and Neil Lester is a senior sustainability scholar and a professor of English at ASU.